Good evening and welcome to the Town of Discovery Bay Board of Directors Special Meeting. At this time, I'd like to call the meeting to order. Roll call, please.
President Steele.
Here.
Vice President Pease.
Here.
Director Graves. Not here. Director Lee.
Here.
Director Simon. Not here.
Thank you. At this time, we'll open public comment. Seeing no public in the audience, I will now close public comment. I'm going to turn it over to council, please.
Thank you. The Town of Discovery Bay Board of Directors will adjourn into closed session in accordance with the item listed on the agenda as item D1.
Mark Messick.
He writes his time down, but I write off the bill, so he won't get billed. He gets credit.
Good evening and welcome to the Town of Discovery Bay Board of Directors regular meeting this evening. I just don't like to call our meeting to order. I'd like to turn it over to council, please.
Thank you very much. The Town of Discovery Bay Board of Directors is reconvening from closed session, and there is no reportable action.
Thank you very much. At this time, I'd like to call our regular meeting to order. If you all rise with me in the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
President Steele.
Here.
Vice President Pease.
Here.
Director Graves.
Here.
Director Lee.
Here.
Director Simon. He's absent.
I don't understand. What's wrong?
Thank you.
That's funny.
At this time, we move on to public comments. Public comments will be a 3-minute time limit. During the public comments, the public may address the board on any issue within the district's jurisdiction, which is not on the agenda. The public may comment on any item on the agenda at the time the item is before the board for consideration. Any person wishing to speak must come up and speak from the podium. There will be no dialogue between the board and the commenter. Any clarifying questions from the board must go through the chair. Is there any public comment?
I believe that PG&E is here to give some public comment.
All right. Well, at this time, maybe that'd be a great time to have some public comment. PG&E.
Hint, hint.
Thank you for having us. I was asked to come and answer any questions that you may have regarding the outage. The gas outage that we experienced last week. I want to say thank you for all the hospitality you guys gave us and the crews. We had over 200 gas service representatives from all over the service territory migrate here on their holiday time to make sure that you guys are safe and make sure that you guys got service as quickly as possible. So I'm going to keep it open and answer any questions if you have any. About the outage.
Is it a determination of what caused the outage?
No, we have not determined what caused it. As a matter of fact, we've went ahead and solicited a bid to Exponent, who is an engineering consulting firm, to come out and look at the cause of this outage. Okay. Yeah. But what it was a fluctuation in pressure, and that's what we noticed at our control center in San Ramon. And we immediately sent somebody out here to look at it, and that's why we shut it off. Safety was absolutely the most important thing.
I know you had a command vehicle here.
Yes.
And communicating, but I wasn't quite sure what and how that communication system works. Maybe you could explain to the board and the public how the normal process to communicate back to the community and how that center worked a little bit.
So in events such as this, we have an emergency response system. And our emergency response could be remote or it could be on site. And the mobile command unit allows us to have a remote emergency response on site. And so we're able to address the issue with boots on the floor right here and talk to our customers right here, as opposed to being in the office 30, 40 miles away in Concord or in San Ramon. So that's what it does. It's just we mobilized our unit. We brought everyone who can make decisions right here and housed them right here in our mobile community. I hope that answers your question.
Well, it does. I have heard from the public. First of all, I want to say thank you to PG&E and all the folks. You jumped through the hoop, you put manpower, there were boots on the ground. I didn't know if there were that many blew it away trucks. I saw that action. That was good. The only issue that I heard fairly frequently was the communication from PG&E into the community. I know that our staff is getting updates and things, but and there's maybe some things we could have done a little better on our website, etc. So it's, let's say, learning experience. I don't know how you improve it, because I don't go through these things. You know, that's in your department, but some way to have a better communication with the general public, and I don't know what that is.
We did our best to make sure we communicated. We put the signs out in the front as you can't come into the to the facilities. We established an IDR, which is a distribution to all of everyone via the phone. It just so happened, it coupled with a technical problem that we were having earlier that day on the electrical side, right? So some of you may have gotten 7 or 8 calls earlier that day that had nothing to do with our gas outage. And so we've since corrected that. It just happened to be that day. It was going to happen. It just happened to be that day. So we've since corrected that issue, and that won't happen again. And going forward, any type of problem that we have, as you would know, you're going to get a phone call. You're going to be well notified in an event such as this. When we get our mobile command unit, we get those electronic signs out with the words on it. We're able to do our best if we can to communicate. So.
I think the community appreciated the warming center. I don't know if we've got utilized to its fullest extent.
Well, we have well over 60 people utilized it over 3 days. So, you know, and I was at the elementary school, and right here, this facility was a warming center as well. So we had Red Cross. We partnered with Red Cross to have the cots and the blankets, and we had food because we knew it was an inconvenience. It was very much an inconvenience to be without, your gas during that time. So we did our best.
Just as a night aside, talking to the crews that were walking down my street and other streets, they were very professional, they were very pleasant. They knew everybody was stressed out, and they did a marvelous job.
That is great to hear.
I was very impressed. I knew that they were working long hours, and they probably were doing the same thing 100 times a day, but they were very cordial, they were very understanding of some frustration that was out there.
Thank you.
Very proud
of the crews.
Very proud of them. And I was out of town, so I was getting emails from people saying, are you cold? Or I heard about this from all friends that have heard about this throughout the state. And I said, yeah, I'm fine. I'm in Palm Desert playing golf, and everything's cool. Everything's warm, actually. But nonetheless, I did hear from the people that I spoke to that were here that the crews that came in. Did a fantastic job. The actual boots on the ground were courteous, responsive. We were able to schedule somebody to be at our place at a specific time without them having to wait half a day. They were like there for 15 minutes, and it was turned on. We got our neighbors turned on while we were out of town because somebody had access to our place. So I want to make sure that I to tell you guys that you guys did a phenomenal job from the boots on the ground.
Thank you.
PG&E as a company failed pretty miserably for those of us that were out of town. Your website never had an outage posted on it. So I'm on social media, I'm seeing that we have a problem in town. I'm on the board of directors. I go to your website, it says no outages. I call, I wait on hold for 45 minutes to get through to your call center in Sacramento. I had spoken to some people here in town and knew, this was on Monday, I knew that the gas was not going to be turned back on until at least, at that time it was Tuesday evening. I think it actually came on early Tuesday afternoon. But I knew that. I called the Sacramento Center to try to get some, the number that you guys give to try to get some information, talk to the call center, and the guy says, well, we're sending people around, they're going to turn your gas back on, we're going to light your pot lights, which is all true. And I said, well, when's that going to start? He goes, well, I think they're starting it right now. This is Monday afternoon. I says, well, they're not turning the gas back on until Tuesday night. How can they be doing it now? And he says, oh, really? So as a company, and the way they handled the communication, especially through the things you have available to you, the technology available, it wasn't good at all. Not to reflect on how fantastic the customer service was here in town. I want to make sure I'm clear on that. But there was a horrible failure somewhere with regards to communicating through the technology that's available, which people turn to in today's world. And I think that needs to be resolved as in a much better fashion going forward for other communities.
communities that might have the same issue.
So, Mr. Graves, sorry for that experience. And it is my responsibility to make sure this is my division. I'm responsible for that communication, and I'm going to assure you that that's not going to happen.
Thank you.
In conversation with Tom, he had indicated to me that and maybe this isn't the right time to bring it up, maybe it is, I'm not sure, that PG&E utilizes this facility. We opened it up for him. Poor Virgil spent the entire night here waiting for PG&E crews to arrive, and he was in here in his shorts and t-shirt and flip-flops with no heat on, and as I noted Virgil a number of times over the past couple days, thank you. But at the end of the day, PG&E come in, did get the heat going on in here, use the facility. They come in, they clean the whole place, they clean the carpets. And I think Tom mentioned to me that PG&E is also interested in providing a grant to the town for the community center. Are you aware of that? Oh.
Yes, I'm very aware of it. But first, let me just say thank you publicly. So thank you very much for all that. You deserve it.
But thank his wife.
We shook hands that night, and I know it was cold. He held it down for his brother. I appreciate it.
He had icicles falling off his beard.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. So yes, we approved three separate grants. Don't know the amount of the grants yet, but to the warming centers particularly. One was the community center here, and the other one was the elementary school, so Byron School District. We'll both receive a grant, and I think there's an opportunity to help with one of the interested subjects that may be on the minds of the board. Not sure what that is, but I heard dog park. So we'll see what that comes out of. But we want to be here on the 30th of the month. I think we have a big grand event on the 30th of the month here in Discovery Bay. So we want to make that announcement there, if that's okay with you.
I think you're referring to our board workshop.
Yes.
Yes.
Board workshop. Mm-hmm. If that's okay with you.
You're bringing money for all of your... you'll be up first.
That's okay. And also, while I'm here, I see a police officer in the back, the sheriff. They're very intricate in us partnering and making sure that everyone was secure. I know there was some... and you guys and your crew, I think it was Lieutenant Hubble, is that right? And his team really came together to ensure that everyone was safe, that we wouldn't have a problem, and we definitely engaged in that. So thank you also for the effort that you guys put into your crew. Please give them a round of applause for us and thank them at your morning meetings, okay? Any other questions?
I just want to say again, you guys were very professional, good service at my house, unified messaging, figure that out, and because I got mixed messages too, and it was confusing, so.
Yeah.
And I was patient, but it was just like, wow, 45 minutes, and nobody knows. Thank you.
So thank you for your time.
Yes, I've got one thing, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I think what would be best in your interest is if you had, like you said, you had one guy here at the command post.
Yeah.
If someone here could actually give the information to people in town instead of like Kevin and everybody else, they called and everyone's getting different stories and there's 23 different calls. So if you had the top guy here that could actually decipher the information, the nice thing about social media is everyone was on Facebook and Nextdoor trying to figure things out and helping people the best that we could, and that was huge. We got extra blankets, we got extra heaters, but everyone's being told that it's supposed to come on in an hour, and those who knew better, at least kind of got the word out that that's not really true. One thing that we did, we told everyone just to come down here to the command center, and sure enough, they came down to the command center within a half an hour. Someone was there and helping out. So I think, just to reiterate everybody, some boots on the ground were great, but I think if it happens again or when it happens again, it'd be very important for a top guy to be here who knows what's going on, so not calling back, somewhere else and getting false information.
Which makes sense. I mean, I was actually here. I think I spent 3 days, probably 36 hours out here, 4 days. So you're right. I tried to be out here, and we did have quite a number of people stop by our mobile command unit, both when it was in the parking lot across the street and when it was here. I think we had 80 when we moved it. There was about 80 people over the last 4 or 5 days from late Wednesday through Sunday, about 80 people who stopped by, and we were able to line a lot of people up during that period of time. So we're doing our best, but there's always opportunity for improvement, and I hear you very loud and clear. I'll make sure that this happens.
So the rumor about a valve with water in it, and that's all BS?
I can't even speak to it. Yeah. I'm not the engineer.
Yeah.
You know, so.
You know how rumors are. That's then all of a sudden that's going around.
Of course. That is spreading like wildfire. Yeah. But we're in a position where we can't announce it because we haven't done any study. We haven't determined what it is. So I can't say whether it's not or what it is. All I can say is that it's under investigation. We hired a company to come out and look at this.
I just like to say, I think you, PG&E, did a great job. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think you also have a great opportunity facing you right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that is to communicate to this to the community.
Yes.
What you've done to improve the communications. We know what you can do with, mm-hmm. with the gas and electric.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you've got a great opportunity to go out and extend your communications right now, test it out, go to Nextdoor, whatever other social applications you have, but see what you need to do. And thank you, Rick Howard, too, for I was on Nextdoor, and you chimed in, so real nice. Amanda Dove did, as well as so many others. So it's a great tool. Mm-hmm. You might look into that. And so, thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate the comment. What we want to do is we want to come back in another 60 days and give you an update on where that investigation is. And then, of course, you guys are going to be one of the first to know once that investigation is complete. You know what's happening. And I'll be the one to deliver that message to you.
Great. What about the rumor about everyone in Discovery Bay getting a year PG&E free? Is that true?
It was a
robocall.
It kept coming.
The communication's going bad again.
Is there any other public comment?
Still at PG&E.
All right, at this time, we're going to close public comment and move on to item C, board officers' appointment and district representative committee positions. And I will turn this over to you.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. I would like to, before you make your board officer changes, I would like to thank President Steele for the year that he served on behalf of the community. As always, it's a pleasure working with who's ever sitting in the big chair, and this year was no exception. I believe this is your second turn, in the second rotation through, and from my perspective and from that of staff, we really appreciate your input, your guidance, your advice, and we've got a little parting gift for you.
Rick Howard, it's been a great 5 years. Thank you for all the time. All right.
You need to open that.
Oh, okay. It's a lot of chocolate.
Very new.
Oh, wow.
It's
good.
Yeah.
Oh, very nice. Oh, thank you.
Yes, it's your fault, Kevin. All right. Well, I appreciate the board. We have a great board here, and a great town, and a great staff, and a great general manager and council, and appreciate it. So it's been easy being president in the town of Discovery Bay. It hasn't always been, it's been a challenge all the time, but it's been easy to work with you guys, so. All right, this time we're going to have a process.
Nope, here. You actually need a motion, nominations, and a motion second for right. The new appointments.
I would make a motion for Bill Peace to be president of the board.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. At this time, we will pass the gavel. Thank you.
Chairs.
All right. Thank you. I'm going to sit on the end, actually. So I'm going to push on the door. All right. Excuse us, guys. Thank you.
The music has stopped playing.
The chairs are always moving here,
though. Make sure I jump in the game here. I don't want everybody else to be the only one not moving around here. I guess you guys know I'm awake.
Lucky.
And president of the town.
Can we do the motion?
We could have, but.
Go ahead and make the rest.
I'd like to make a motion, Mr. President.
Yes.
I would like to nominate, oh, this is awkward.
Yes, it is.
Nominate Bob Leet and nominate as vice president, and in that same motion, per our agreement with the board, nominate myself as the president pro tem.
I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
You already did the name plates?
Yeah.
You did?
And, that's it.
That'll do it.
All right, well.
Good luck, President Pease.
Thank you. And I would like to thank the board this past year has worked very well. And Chris, I'd like to thank you for being the president. We've got a great board, works together well. I think we have an excellent staff, as you mentioned. And look forward to carrying on your tradition into the future this year, see what brings. At this time, we'd like to have area agency reports, so the sheriff's department, please.
Hello, everyone. Happy New Year. Last month, we had 367 calls for service in the Discovery Bay area with approximately 36 reports, which I put in you guys' desk in front of you. Going through here, if you guys remember me talking about the mail, package theft, all that, probably going to go any increase. Well, it did. We had 5 reported package thefts to us last month. And in a sense, in 2 separate instances, we did make 2 arrests, if I'm not mistaken, that we connected these 2 individuals with some type of a package theft or mail theft. They were able to find one or two items in the vehicle or purchase a package slip of some sort. One of the arrests came in with a short pursuit. I think it was like a half a mile and a pickup. The officer pulled him over, got him, found that, linked him to a description, linked him to somebody who called in mail theft early in the morning, about 4:30 in the morning, suspicious person. So without the key on this is for me to say that we need the community to help us on this. When they see something suspicious, they got to call it in, give us the best description we can, because that's how we mainly got this. To be quite frank and honest, the officer is driving down the street and seeing anyone walking down the street holding a package. Anybody can walk on the sidewalk. It's not against the law to do that. Now, you call in and say, hey, that guy is not related to the area. He's suspicious. And he's carrying a package. Now you've just given the officer a reason to stop this guy. So, and that's what we're looking for our legal authority to stop this guy and do what we need to do. But on a good note, I mean, that's a good thing. I think the damage has been done with the mail theft in the last 6 to 8 months with all the mail theft that we've had. The bad guys know it's out here, it's easy targets, so until we can, and it's still being done. So until we can get people to get their mail out every day, just kind of stop that activity. We did have some residential burglaries. 3 of them were reported to us. All of them were a long period of time, anywhere between a month, 2 to 3 weeks vacant. Which was forced entry into the residence. Then we had a lot of petty theft, a lot of theft. We had 4 incidences of theft from the home. It's not really a residential burglary of forced entry, but it seems to be the number one, the lead that we have on this is an invited guest from the party, mainly jewelry, such like that, and then one of the incidences. And the other 3 were pretty much contractors. People that were hired to do some type of work. That's the lead. I'm not saying that's exactly who did it, but when the residents are home and they're saying, well, these are the only people that came to my house. So you gotta be very wary, aware who you're letting in your house. That's your house. Walk around with them. Don't let them go in any room by themselves. It's your house, not theirs. So you really have to look at that. Check references, all that good stuff. But that's the main thing. It just seemed to be a lot of petty theft, and I just do the little things like that. Other than that, any questions? Anything you see here that's...
One question. I know when you were here, last meeting, the mail theft came up, and we had a suggestion maybe to talk to the postmaster.
Yeah, I talked to the inspector, the Steve. I talked to him. He's from San Francisco. He kind of runs the whole postal inspector service here and deals with all that. And, you know, it's hard for me to say. I can't put words for what this post office can do or what they can't do. They're aware that it's a big problem, but it's a big problem everywhere. So depending on the amount and what's going on, obviously, Discovery Bay compared to other areas where their jurisdiction is small in comparison. So the old people from where it's rampant, and you see it on the news every day, what's going on in the more congested areas. So yeah, they've been trying to make some contact, you know, that aspect. And we took it upon ourselves too. I mean, I made sure I went to the lighthouse and talked to the officer and says, hey, this is what's going to probably start going on, so keep an eye out. And as you can see from some of the calls that we did deal with, especially in our first suit, that's always an option for them to look at. So every time we do, we're always looking for that, make sure, oh, there's a mail there, let me check that out. It's another step for them to look at.
Yeah, and I would think of thinking also of at least letting the postal delivery personnel be aware of this as well.
And they do give training for their postal guys, and that's one of the things I mentioned. And that is something that's put out to them to say, hey, you're aware of your, especially the UPS guys and stuff, but I know the postal service does too. But again, it's going to be up to that driver to do what he needs to do. So.
Thank you.
Anything else, guys? All right. Thank you. Take care, guys.
If we don't have it on our website, have some little thing about a little bulletin or something on the front page, then you know, mail alert or something, some kind of a thing. Let the residents who get on there be aware that this is happening, and put a phone number down for them to call for suspicious activities. I mean, I don't know how to phrase that or how to design it, but something on the front page that would alert the neighbors to. Call it in. Okay, CHP. I don't see him in the building.
There's a reason he's not here. Officer Donnie
Thomas.
As you know, he's a motor officer. He was in an accident about a month or so ago. He's doing well. He's recuperating at home, and I'm sure he'll be back soon. It was a fairly serious incident, but he is it was not life threatening, and he's back home recovering. So I'm sure when he gets recovered, he'll be back.
Yeah. If we could send him a card or something.
We did. Okay. We will. Or we will.
Thank you. Fire protection. Never see them. And supervisor people.
Good evening, everybody. Happy New Year. Hope your holidays were safe and relaxing and maybe, aside from being cold. Just a few things this year, to start the year, is we have a few openings on the Discovery Bay P6 Council Advisory, or Advisory Council, and what that does is we meet once a quarter and discuss the budget for the P6. And how we can utilize the funds that are in there, or better utilize the funds with the sheriff. So the P6 funds help to fund things with the sheriff, and unfortunately not the resident officer that we lost, but we can sometimes add people or get more sheriffs for special events and different things. So we have two openings on that. And so we have advertised, our office has advertised it in our newsletter that went out the third week of December. We will continue to advertise it until they are filled. So if you know anybody, neighbors, friends that want to be involved, want to have a say on what's going on, please have them contact me directly. You? No?
No, I was going to say, I believe they have to live in a certain geographical boundary.
And that might change, because the problem is that it'll leave us with only three people on there. And so normally they like it from certain communities. The ones that we don't have representation from right now are the Lakes and Ravenswood. However, if we keep it open for a certain period of time and we're not getting it filled, we may have to open it up to others. So we're just announcing it that way and hopes to see what we get. Because the last opening that we had for almost a year. So, and then as soon as we filled him, now we have these other two that are going. So, the other thing is there was a speeding issue in the Timber Point school location area that's been brought to our attention a couple of times right before the school went out on vacation. And so we want to let you know that we have contacted CHP as well as traffic engineering and county staff to possibly come out and do just a survey, take a look at it, what's going on. A lot of it seems to be the school congestion, but with higher speeds in a school area, as you can imagine, it's a little dangerous for the kids. So that is coming, or we're working on that as of yesterday and today. So hopefully, do the kids go back next week or they're back this week? Okay, so we are gonna have a traffic engineer out at some point this week, possibly next week, to review it, and then we'll update as we have more information on that. Let's see. And it is the time of year again for dock sign orders. So we usually do dock sign orders twice a year. They're due by May 15th and October 15th. So if you need a replacement dock sign or you don't have one, you can contact me. I will provide you with the order form and information, and Rick put it in the newsletter that went out. When did that go out?
This week.
Okay, so it's going out this week. So the information is in there, but you can always contact me and I can forward you the order form and information on how it works. Once the orders are placed, depending upon the quantity that the county has to make, it can take 2 to 3 months to get them done. So it just depends on the volume that's requested at that time. So if you have any other questions on that, you can also give me a call directly. And then the last thing I have tonight is for the board. The AllMAC meeting has been set and confirmed. It is Monday, February 1st, 4 to 6 p.m., and it will be held at the San Joaquin Yacht Club in Bethel, Iowa. You will be getting an actual email invitation to accept, but I just wanted to throw that out there so you guys can get it on your calendars. And that's all I have.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.
Yep. Okay, we're down to committee liaison reports, the transplant report. On that one, county planning, code enforcement.
Did not meet last month.
Okay, and special district, there was no meeting, special district. That brings us to presentations.
Not this evening.
Not this evening, okay. And we'll go to the consent calendar.
Thus, no.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Public hearing, urban water management plan. Manager Howells.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. As Justin Cho makes his way to the podium, this is a public hearing, so the board is going to have to open the public hearing once I'm completed with my introductory comments. And Justin Cho from Bludorf and Scalmanini will go ahead and provide the board with the 2010 urban water management plan, and he'll explain the reasons why it's happening in 2015 or 2016 and why it didn't happen in 2010, and there were reasons for that. But I'd also like to mention that the 2015 update of the 2010 urban water management plan will be coming shortly and following on the heels of this, that data is primarily included in this one. So, Mr. President, it's appropriate for you at this point in time to open the public hearing.
Well, we're going to do just that. We're going to open the public hearing on our urban water management plan. Is there any public comments?
No. You're actually going to receive a presentation first and then public comments.
Okay.
Sure. So, I am Justin Cho with Bludorf and Scalmanini. Thanks for having me here. I'm going to just go over the contents of what's included in the 2010 Urban Water Management Plan so that you're aware of everything that's in there, so that you can have this public hearing and hopefully move to adopt the plan following the presentation. I wasn't planning so much on focusing necessarily on why the 2010 is being conducted now, so much as I was just going to go over what's in the 2010 plan. But it's true that it was due in 2011. Most agencies did submit it at that time, not all agencies. DWR the State Department of Water Resources welcomes submitting it, even though it's late. There's no penalty necessarily for submitting it past the deadline, but I believe as the story goes, that we were focusing at that time on the Water Master Plan, which was more of a critical document that focused on the planning of the infrastructure needs throughout the system and development of a capital improvement plan. Whereas the early plan, it's required, but there wasn't so much teeth in the law, and it was kind of put off at a time. And it's more of a state-mandated document that has checklists of items that the state requires every urban water supplier to go through. So with that, I'll just go through what's included in the document. So the purpose today is for me to just go over the items that are included in the urban plan and what that means for the district. Specifically, I'm going to talk about the water use reduction goals that are stated in the urban water plan in accordance with the Senate Bill SBX 7-7, and then also discuss the policy measures that are proposed in the plan to help meet those goals. So the topics I'll cover is just an overview of the urban water plan, a discussion of the water use reduction targets that are stated in the plan, the demand management measures, which basically is a term meaning the conservation measures that would be implemented as a result of this plan, and then other provisions stated in the plan. So overview, it's a state mandated water supply planning document that is conformed with the UWM Act, and it basically consists of a checklist of 60 elements that need to be discussed and addressed. The purpose is to direct long-term planning of water resources. The focus is on water source. So for the town of Discovery Bay, that's the groundwater basin. It doesn't really focus on the infrastructure such as the wells and pumps and treatment and everything else needed to serve that water. It's just more of the focus is, again, on is there water to meet the demand. It's required of every urban water supplier that has more than 3,000 connections or serves more than 3,000 acre feet per year. And it gives the state kind of more of a consistent format so that they have this snapshot for all of the urban water suppliers throughout the state. And it's also required in order to be eligible for state grants and funding. These are other regulations that are relevant to the urban plan. I don't necessarily have to go over them in detail, but they one thing to point out is somewhere in the middle there, water supply assessments and written verifications of water supply, the SB 610 and SB 221 are assessments that are required for developments to occur, developments over 500 dwelling units to occur. And the urban plan cannot, if written a certain way, which we wrote it this way, can be used to satisfy those requirements when developments are being proposed. So the contents of the plan itself are broken out into six chapters. Chapter one is plan preparation, which basically goes over the intent of the plan as well as the adoption process, which is kind of we're in the final stages of right now. So part of that adoption process was also notifying other agencies nearby of the intent to adopt the plan, and the town of Discovery Bay has made those notifications and make the plan public for public review. So I believe it's been public for at least 2 weeks now. And so the purpose today is to finalize the adoption process. The second chapter is just a description of the system, all of the water supply sources, the infrastructure, as well as a discussion of how the population has grown over time and the projection of where that population is going to be. In a 20-year planning horizon. The third chapter is what we're going to be discussing today on establishing the baseline water use and the water use reduction targets. Chapter four is a discussion of the water supplies of the system, which is basically just groundwater. It also is required to include a discussion of other water supply opportunities such as transfer water, recycled water, and desalination, which there isn't much of a story there, but there was a little bit on recycled water. Chapter five was more or less a standardized assessment of water supply reliability and preparation of a water shortage contingency plan, and then six is the conservation measures. So this slide here just kind of compares the difference between the urban plan and the master plan. I already pretty much went over that, so I'll just skip this slide in the essence of time. So the key elements of what's included in this plan is a target reduction by the year 2020 of 20% of the per capita water use. So that complies with the SBX 7-7 is setting this water use target. It also has the assessment of the groundwater basin during a range of drought conditions, provides the 20-year outlook of the supply reliability, evaluates other alternative supply opportunities, and establishes the water shortage contingency plan and demand measures. So I'm going to now talk about the water use that was determined as part of this plan. So the baseline water use has to look at a 10-year data set. So that data set was 2000 to 2010, and it's total water use over divided by the population. So it includes water losses, it includes commercial water and everything within the system. And so that was determined to be 261 gallons per capita per day for the town of Discovery Bay within that 10-year period. They allow four different methods to determine what your water use target is going to be. The method that was the least impact to the town was the straight 20% target off of baseline. And so we looked at all four methods, and what we came up with was the least impact would be this 20% method. So by 2020, the goal stated in this plan is to achieve 209 gallons per capita per day from 261. And then 2015, there would be an interim target, which is just measured between those two points. So just to give you a sense of that, within your region, San Joaquin River region has an average baseline of 248, and there's a regional goal of 174. And then in comparison to nearby water systems, town of Discovery Bay has the higher of the baseline and that's 2020 target. So this slide, there's a lot going on and I don't really need to talk much about it, but just to say that there was a relationship between population growth and water use within the system. So there's two sets of data here. There's a population data set and there's a water use data set. And then off to the right, there's just a bunch of projections. So there's a range of projections. There's one that was worked out from the master plan, which was based upon the the maximum amount of water that the system could use in terms of planning for capital improvements. And then the lower forecast is what the urban water management plan projects using a 20% reduction. So there's kind of a range of forecasts now that we've basically put out there between these two documents. The urban plan isn't one that we would recommend using for capital improvement planning purposes because it's really just setting a goal, a hope to have this kind of reduction. Whereas you could see there was a historic water use that was higher in the past, so there's capacity for the system to, you know, use a lot of water. In the recent years, we've seen water significantly declining as in response to the emergency drought regulations and the extreme conservation measures that have been taking place. So how will we get to those reductions? That's where the demand management measures come into play. There's 14 of these, we'll just call them DMMs, which are defined in the Urban Water Act, which were originally defined by the California Urban Water Conservation Council. So they're just topics or items or programs that could be implemented. And every agency has to have a discussion of these DMMs, if they plan to implement it or not. If they don't plan to implement it, needs to be supported by justification and a cost-benefit analysis. Some of the DMMs are, we'll just get into it. Some of them involve rebates, but not all of them. So here's the 14 of them. I'm not going to name them all off right now, but they're broken into two basic categories. There's a, I'll go to the next slide. There's a foundational, and then there is a programmatic. So the foundational aren't rebate-based. Let me just go through them. So the most important one here is the metering. That's the one that has the real, where the town's really going to see reductions. So metering with commodity rates is a demand management measure, as well as conservation pricing. And right now, what's written in the plan is that there would be a meter retrofit program rolled out from 2016 to 2018. And there would also be commodity rates applied to those that have metered services. So by 2018, the goal is to be fully metered. There's a potential savings of up to 20% of residential water use. That's just what's been stated in other studies. So conservation pricing is another measure that once you are fully metered, you can consider. So what's written in the plan now is that that will be considered after the rollout of the meters in 2018. Conservation pricing is basically just, there's different methodologies, but essentially tries to get at generating more of the revenue from the volumes used rather than the base rate charge. So if there's more revenue coming from volume use, it's supposed to make people, you know, there's supposed to be less water use in response to that. So those are the most important DMMs that the district has stated they're going to be moving forward, and that's how it's written in the plan. System water audits, leak detection, that's something that's always going on. So that's how it's written in the plan here. We're always visually monitoring and being very adamant about making repairs. After the meters are rolled out, there will be an improved capacity to do auditing. And there is a potential savings as a result of being able to find where leaks are or make mainline replacements preemptively. Then there's informational programs. There's public information, which the district provides bill inserts. There's links to conservation on the website, a message board. That's basically what that program is just getting information out about water conservation, which the district's shown to be very good at in the last few years during this conservation period with the drought. School education programs isn't something that the district has participated in, but it's something that is being considered. So the way it's stated now is 2016 and onward, there will be some kind of development of materials and working with local schools to provide just education about where the water comes from, you know, so people know. And so that's, that, you know, more education about local students about the specific water system that they're a part of. Wholesale is not something that we don't participate in, so there isn't a measure for that. And then water conservation coordinator, that's been assigned to the wastewater manager, and that would just be somebody who oversees all of these conservation efforts. And then a water waste prohibition is the final DMM in this category. And there's a few parts to that. There's been ordinances already on water waste in response to the drought. And then the plan includes a water shortage contingency plan in the event of catastrophic loss of the water supply. So the programmatic DMMs do relate mostly with rebates, rebate-based programs, which at first the town wasn't considering participating in, but now the town is proposing to do $15,000 in rebates for 1 year at least to see what the effectiveness of programs are going to be. So the first item is actually not a rebate program, the water survey programs. That's more of a service that the district provides to customers free of charge, where if a customer asks, hey, can you look at the way I use water or help me audit my use? The district can do that and provide recommendations for upgrades to appliances or instructions on how to set their irrigation timers. That's a demand management measure in itself. I don't know how much it's utilized, but that's there. The services can be provided by the district. Residential plumbing retrofit is a demand management measure that we're opting out of, and that's a rebate-based program where agencies would provide showerheads and faucet aerator kits free of charge. We're focusing on other rebate-based programs that are below this, which are administered by other agencies, and that was really the key, is that for getting our feet wet in terms of rebate programs, we wanted to try to latch on to other programs that are administered by other agencies to reduce that administrative effort, whereas the plumbing retrofit would have to be something, stocked and administered through the town itself. The next three are ones where we found rebate programs that we could participate in. So the washing machine rebate would be the PG&E program, where PG&E in the Bay Area works with Bay Area communities, and this is going to be available until the end of 2016, where they'll provide a $150 rebate for a high efficiency washing machine purchase. So if the district participates with PG&E, they would sign up, and then advertise so that your customers are aware of it. And then whenever they would apply through PG&E, and PG&E would just ask whoever their contact is at the district if it was legitimate, and if so, the district would pay $100 of that rebate, and PG&E would pay $50 of it for a total of $150. And then there is an admin fee that's tacked on to that as well, which I think is like approximately $10 per rebate. And then the toilet replacement rebate program, there's a residential and commercial, and that's through a different agency, but it's the same idea. They have an existing rebate program, they do the administration, and basically the district just reviews the applications and gives this agency the money to process that rebate. So that's for a ultra low flush toilet replacement program, and that's through the California Urban Water Conservation Council. It's a $100 rebate plus a $10 admin fee. The same would be satisfying another demand management measure, the second to the bottom, conservation programs for commercial, industrial, and institutional. It's the same as above, but it's a $200 rebate for a commercial toilet instead of a $100 rebate for a residential toilet. So those three rebate programs, the washing machine, residential toilet, commercial toilet, would come out of this $15,000 budget, essentially, that's a budget for 1 year, just to see what the effectiveness is and what the public interest is. So it's a nominal fee just to participate in these demand management measures and see where it goes from there.
Just a clarifying question is, if I hadn't seen that, maybe the budget committee has talked about it. So if I understood properly, it's $15,000 budget divided over all three of those programs, or $15,000 for each program?
I think divided over the three is what we talked about. They're kind of pay as you go, and so they both work slightly differently. I think with the PG&E, you say, well, I'll put a cap on it for 1 month and see what happens this month. And then I think with the other one, I think it was with the California Urban Water Council, it's per rebate, you basically send them a check. So, you just stop doing it when you don't want to do it anymore.
At this particular point, it's 15 total, no matter how it gets used, versus I was assuming it was 40.
45, right. I think right now it's the 15.
That's right. It's $15,000 overall program starting, and it's carried over year to year. It's not a single year. We actually included that $15,000 in the upcoming water rate structure that's going to be revisited by the board later this year. So it's included in that so that there's funding for that. And it allows us to check that box on the urban water management plan.
Essentially, yeah. Yeah, and the these pencil out to be anywhere from $2 to $3 per CCF per 100 cubic feet in savings. So in terms of cost to benefit, it's, you know, it's $3 per 100 cubic foot, and the town charges $1.50 per 100 cubic foot. So it doesn't pencil out, you know, but it's a way of reducing water use, satisfying this demand management measure. When somebody puts a high efficiency washing machine and replaces a low efficiency washing machine, you'll be seeing that savings for the life of the washing machine. It's going to be a drop in the bucket in terms of the water reductions, and the irony is there isn't a water supply issue necessarily. There's not a target in mind, so some agencies might approach this that, well, how much water do I have to save? Like, they might have real water issues where they're like, I have to reduce water, and so I will budget a certain amount and hopefully reduce a certain number of CCF. It's not really the case for us. So it's more of just being part of the process.
Being in the program.
Yeah. Okay. So, the rest of the presentation is just kind of going over the water use within the town, but it's really brief. Like, this is a snapshot of how the town uses water. It's a majority is single-family residential. There's probably a 10%, that's from 7 to 12% is what we estimate being losses, being if you were fully metered, you would probably still have about a 10% unaccounted for water, which is through leakage and just non-metered uses. Then there's a 13% irrigation. So obviously, you know, single family, residential reductions would be the low hanging fruit. On the side there, I also show the annual totals. And so, you could see the town has used more than 1,000 million gallons per year, and Rick just gave me the update that in 2015 the town used 850 million gallons per year. That works out to be about, what's that?
34% over 2013.
Okay, yeah. In terms of the water use targets we were talking about before, this works out to approximately 155 gallons per capita per day, so totally overshoots the 2020 target. And so when we do go into this 2015 urban water plan update, we will have by far met that. And I mean, that's by virtue of the conservation and drought. So this graph was really a carryover from a previous presentation I did earlier on the draft urban water management plan, just showing what your annual curve may look like during conservation, where you've got kind of this base water use in the winter months, peak use during spring summer periods, and then you come into conservation and you're gonna reduce the base slightly, and you're gonna reduce a major reduction in the peak. And that's essentially what these conservation measures target, is bringing the peak down, because those are the watering, it's the irrigation, that's where you get the most savings. So other provisions in the plan, there was an assessment of the supply reliability, which it's stated in there, has been stated by LSCE and other presentations, that the groundwater conditions are stable for current levels of pumping, for the projected levels of pumping from the basin, and the district's also participating in the groundwater sustainability plan in accordance with the Groundwater Management Act. Reliability for the town is really viewed in just making sure there's sufficient capacity in the active wells to meet the demand of the system. So just making sure the wells stay functioning and there's enough of them. And then the plan also, like I said before, includes this water shortage contingency plan. It's an appendix in the plan. It's a draft ordinance that talks about how water rationing would be rolled out potentially in the event of shortage, which would be, if there's a catastrophic loss of wells, which is extremely unlikely, or if there's a mandatory state order, such as what we've seen last year. We do discuss recycled water opportunities. There's a current project that was completed on the wastewater treatment plant that took some of the discharge water and reused it for on-site purposes. This reduced the use in the system by about 28 million gallons per year, approximately a 2% savings, and that's permanent, that's forever now. And then there's potential recycled water projects, but they're not feasible at this time. So the wastewater treatment plant will be upgraded to tertiary treatment system, which will meet Title 22 recycled water requirements. So there will be a water supply source once those improvements are made at the wastewater plant that could be used, legally used in a purple pipe system. There's purple pipes on the opposite side of town. So it would require piping 5 miles of transmission main, which is $4 to $6 million potentially, for the benefit of maybe 150 million gallons per year of savings. So it just doesn't quite pencil out. The need isn't there for it. Transfers or desalination, also there's no plans to participate, and that's what's written in the plan. So the next steps are really this public review, adoption of the plan. If there aren't any changes proposed to the plan, it can be adopted. If there are changes, then those changes have to be made, and then the meeting has to occur again. And then once it's adopted, it can be submitted, and the implementation schedule can roll out, and we can proceed with doing the 2015 update. Sorry that took so long.
Not a problem. Is there any clarifying questions from the board?
Justin, we started this project probably in 2015. I think in early 2014, shortly after we completed the water master plan. And I want to thank Justin and your team. You guys did a great job. And I know that it was sometimes tedious getting data back from us, so appreciate your patience. But at the end of the day, we finally have an urban water management plan. I'm assuming the board approves it. And what this does is a couple things that it's important. One, why it benefits us is outside of the conservation efforts is that if we want to do an annexation into our district, we have to have an urban water management plan placed by law. So the Newport Point of Pantages cannot be annexed until this document has been adopted. Secondly, both our water treatment plant along Newport and our wastewater treatment plant are technically not within our district boundary. They need to be annexed into our district boundary. So once this document is now approved, we can then go through the annexation process to get those two facilities annexed in. The benefit of that is we've been paying property taxes at the 1% rate for those facilities for a long time. So now that we can get those facilities annexed in, we'll save probably about $15,000 to $20,000 a year in property taxes on those two parcels alone. So it's appropriate for the board at this point in time, unless you have any changes or recommendations, to go ahead and close the public hearing.
Comment first, and take comments.
Thank you. And I would like to ask for any and all public comments on the urban water management plan. I'm seeing a little movement in the crowd. So at this particular point, I'm going to close the public hearing. Did we hear a motion to adopt the urban management plan?
I move adoption of the urban water management plan.
Just for clarification, you do have a resolution in your packet. It's numbered XX in your packet, but it is 2016-01. And so your motion could be adopt resolution 2016-01. And that would cover all of the certification and all the findings that need to go along with that.
That's my motion.
I'll second that motion. Been moved and seconded. Do I hear a vote? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Unanimous decision. Okay, with that, we'll move on. Thank you. We'll move on to business and action items. Business and action items.
None this evening.
The little baggies over there.
We'll move on to informational items from the district financial statement.
Curtis is waving by you, Kevin.
See you, Curtis.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. Finance Manager Dean Brightstein is going to give this report this evening.
You got it. There you go.
I've done this before.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much.
much. I'm going to provide you with a district financial statement report for the period ending September 30th, 2015. In the report, it's the combined cash investment, our revenues, our balance sheet, and our budgets for all the zones, water, wastewater, zone 9, and the financing authority. The good news is we're very healthy. Our water and wastewater fund balance is $8.8 million, plus our revenues of $6.3 million, less our expenditures to date of September 30th of $1.2 million, less our hefty reserves of $6.7 million for a fund balance of $7.2 million. In addition to that, our fund balance, the district holds $506,000 in our ECC town bank account, as well as $1.6 million in our ECC developer account. Our Zone 8 fund balance is $415,000, plus our revenues of $514,000, less our expenditures of $174,000, less our reserves of $399,000. It leaves us with a fund balance of $382,896.13 in our fund balance. In addition to our fund balance, Zone 8 holds $125,000 in our ECC Recreation Fund bank account. Our Zone 9 fund balance is $178,000, plus our revenues of $125,000, less our expenditures to date as of September 30th, for $23,000, less our reserves of $188,000, results with a fund balance of $91,000 in our amount. Our financing authority balance as of September 30th, 2015, is $427,000. I'm here to answer any questions if you have. To date, our financing authority balance has run out. We have no funds.
Spent it all.
We've spent it all.
I think we're going to have
a bond. Any questions from the board?
No, thank you.
I have one question.
Sure.
That's on the combined cash investment.
Mm-hmm.
She says down there, cash allocation reconciliation, this is item number 40, allocation 2, finding landscaping number 8, and we have a call it a deficit of $68,000 and everything else on the positive side. I'm just trying to scratch my head a little bit about what does that really mean?
That is actually so the allocation to administration, every month our system allocates the funds to our different zones. This allocation was $67,000. What that means is we probably did a journal entry to correct some things from one fund to another. So that's where that is. So we don't have a deficit. Our actual cash in that fund is in that bank account for Zone 8 is $211,000. So that is just the allocation of the bills and invoices. Yes. So that is the... That's the allocation of the expenses that do get paid out of the water and wastewater fund.
That get reimbursed by?
Mm-hmm.
Is that an offset?
It's an offset.
Somewhere else.
Yes, it is.
Like that sentence.
Yes.
Thank you for the clarification.
You're welcome.
Okay, and I don't see any public discussion on that, so we'll move along. Thank you for that report. President's report, director's comments. I have nothing to report. Any director?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. The chief wasn't here tonight to give his usual report from the ECCFPD. Some interesting things have occurred there since our last meeting. I will not editorial this. The fire district gave, in our deficit that we're in and the spending issues that we have, they gave the firefighters a 5% increase. The firefighters deserve a 5% increase. The fact is there's just no money. They deserve more than a 5% increase. They work at far below market value for us, and I don't blame them for wanting and needing more money. The timing's a little bit odd from the standpoint that we really need to get some long-term funding
to keep the district viable, and this is not going to help. And then at the same time, they have a motion moving forward in a public meeting that's going to be coming up here pretty soon, where they're going to start charging us for $337 every time they go to a call. So at the same time as we're trying to raise money through some sort of a benefits assessment or a tax or a fee-based plan, and there was a lot of ground moving in that direction, in my humble opinion, they shot themselves in the foot when now they say, and this is only for medical emergencies, but 90% of what they do are medical emergencies. Very small amount of what they do are fire. So if they have to show up at your house, not only you're paying for your services through your taxes, but they're going to now send you a bill for $337 to cover this raise that they've given the firefighters. So the future looks pretty bleak for the fire department. It's really what it comes down to.
Did I hear you
correctly?
They imposed an additional fee for service, and that's going to cover the raise and just.
That was probably my opinion. But it's coincidental that they got a 5% raise and at the same time impose a fee for every time that they go out. So, and we know there's no money, so it kind of just leads to you to believe that that's how that raise is going to be paid.
Interesting. Any other great news?
I'm sorry, but I don't kill the messenger.
No, it's not you. Okay. General Manager's report.
Only to say that over the Christmas closure, we didn't have any emergencies, not to say PG&E didn't, but I will say that our staff that was here and participated, especially Virgil, did a great job. And I want to thank again him for that. And looking forward to a nice 2016.
Okay, district legal report.
I will just say that it's been a pleasure working with you as your president the last few years, and you've done a very fine job of running your first meeting, new president. So thank you both.
Oh, thank you very much.
You stole my thunder, man. That was going to be my line.
Director's comments were above.
Oh, that's true. I was going to make sure you finished strong, that's all.
Committee updates. Is there any committee updates? Seeing none, we'll go on to correspondence. Anybody there? Public requests for records. Didn't see any future agenda items.
Who doesn't repeat that?
Seeing none at this time.
Future agenda items, I would like to find out where we are on the park conversion to the. Just give us an update of where we are. You know, we still have these parks that some belong to the county, some belong to us. We're trying to get them all under our umbrella, and I don't think that's moving forward. And I think we've hit a roadblock, but can we just get a review on what that roadblock is and how and who we need to talk to try to, or is it? I just got up there. Sorry. Enough said.
Thanks.
So that okay. Was the update.
With that,
and that update has